Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 302nd episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I am a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the UBC, at the University of British Columbia, also known as UBC.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family physician and a professor at the University of Alberta. And for the third time in a row, we have both Mike and Tina here in the Edmonton studios with us to review the drugs that didn't quite make the list.
Yes. And in case some of you guys are wondering what we're talking about is, over the last couple of podcasts, we've sort of been working our way through a premise in that the world is being devastated by an apocalyptic event. And what we wanted to know is, what are the top 20 drugs that, if you could only have 20, what would they be? And the last two podcasts, we went through them and they were not in order of preference, but we found the drugs were morphine, ASA, epinephrine, insulin, levothyroxine, dexamethasone, salbutamol, a birth control pill, quetiapine, lorazepam, diphenhydramine, omeprazole, furosemide, metoprolol, losartan, metronidazole, amoxicillin / clavulanic acid, doxycycline, fluconazole, and polyethylene glycol. And I think we did a reasonably good job of letting people know why those made our top 20 list. What was very interesting is the average year of patenting for those drugs is the mid-1950s. So quite something when it comes to that many of the more essential medications are, you know, well over 50, if not close to 60 years of age. And so what we thought we would do in this podcast is go over the ones that didn't make it. These are ones that some people thought should be in there and realized that when we got to 20 medications, you could only have 20. So we're just going to quickly run through the list of the medications that didn't make it and try and give the rationale, realizing that many of these medications are exceedingly useful in practice, but they just didn't make our top 20. So should we just start right at the beginning?
Start at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's a very good place to start. So one of the drugs, and I actually had this on my list initially, and then we took it off at the very last minute, and it was a local anesthetic. Now, one can debate because one of the caveats we said that it doesn't, we're not talking about surgery, but I think for just, I think life would be miserable without having a local anesthetic. And the one I chose was, in this case, was bupivacaine. And the reason I chose bupivacaine was, you know, it's fairly rapid onset. There are studies showing that it works equally as quickly as lidocaine. It's slightly longer acting than lidocaine. And I just thought that, you know, it would be very useful to have a local anesthetic. But the guys suggested to me, well, we're not talking about surgery. So you could debate that. But for toothaches and dental procedures and all that sort of stuff are very, very useful medication. I'm sure you guys would not want to practice in an area where there are no local anesthetics.
Yes, if you needed to do something to someone, like cutting something out or sewing them up or whatever, these agents are—they're nothing short of a miracle, really, when you think about it. And those who've had a severe toothache and been frozen, they are—it is a miracle.
Yeah,
and even like something in your eye, that the drops in the eye can be so relieving,
right,
with a local anesthetic. So it's not that we just said that if we imagine this world that James has created. And
is the leader of.
Yeah, and is diabolical. Mm-hmm. We imagine that we didn't have to cut anybody or anything like that, so that's why it fell off the list, but it could easily be argued back.
Or if you, even with, so dental procedures, I agree, that sounds terrible without local anesthetic. Just the thought of it makes me cringe. But we do have morphine on our list.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, worst case scenario.
Sleepy time.
Yeah.
I agree.
A lot of morphine.
I like topical anesthetics for road rashes. So emerge. I mean, honest to gosh, it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And also kids with herpetic lesions in the mouth where they won't eat. And we see them get really, really sick. So I don't know if actually bupivacaine comes in a slurry, but viscoxylocaine and that kind of stuff that we slurry it up and swallow them down. So I think that there is. If our first, one of our goals is to relieve suffering, I think this is definitely a medicine that maybe if you expanded it by another 5 or 10 meds, I think it would be on there.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
No, but the ruler won't let us do any of that. They're very,
the supreme ruler.
He's very dictatorial.
You think all of these things are hurting me. They just make me feel more powerful.
So for egomaniacal people, that often does that.
Yeah, which is why I should be on quetiapine.
Why do you think we put it on the list? Yeah.
Exactly. It was for the ruler of the James world.
We make ourselves sleep with all these meds, and then we actually rule it ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. So the next one, and again, certainly debatable about why it didn't make the top 20 list, was chlorthalidone, because it easily could have. But we felt that we covered our bases with things like furosemide, a beta blocker, and an angiotensin receptor blocker. And remember, we said for this exercise, cost was not an issue. So if cost is not an issue, there's really no, you know, big advantages of a thiazide over other antihypertensives. You know, they probably do pretty much the same thing. So that's kind of why, because of, if it was a cost perspective, for sure chlorthalidone would be on the list. But in this case, it didn't make it because it really didn't have a whole lot of uses in comparison to things like beta blockers and some sort of a drug that works on the renin-angiotensin system. But that was our logic, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to say.
I love your monetary policy. Just print more money.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a loser.
Charge.
Yeah.
So with chlorthalidone, like I think, you know, when we look at the ARB we chose, there you could argue if you're treating just pure hypertension, this would be the drug.
Yeah.
In the ALHAD study, it did show slight superiority on a few outcomes over lisinopril and one in amlodipine. So you could argue that this would be your one drug for hypertension.
Absolutely.
And hypertension is, as you know, relatively prevalent. So we could argue it back on and replace losartan, but the losartan just offered a few other advantages, perhaps.
So again, these were all tricky ones. If we had the top 30 drugs, these would probably all be on it.
Yeah.
What does the World Health Organization do? They do top. Oh, just top meds, or they give a
no?
Number?
They have the. It's called the essential meds list. Yeah, and it's around. I think each country has some subtle differences, but they're in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 medications.
We looked at antivirals were actually on the essential list, despite the lack of great evidence.
Yes,
we're still on the essential list. Yes.
So all of these drugs would be on that list, but this is more a thought exercise for the top 20.
Yes.
And if it was the top 300. There would be a lot of podcasts.
Yeah. But the World Health Organization has a nicer ruler, kind of a beatific.
Do they? I didn't know that.
They pale off mystic.
If I was ruling the world, we just get rid of the WHO.
Yeah. Tofu hot dogs is what you get as payment.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a nice view of the parking lot here.
So the next drug that didn't make the list, and it's probably a surprise to a bunch of people, would be acetaminophen or paracetamol. And we did not put that on the list. We're not talking about children. And we felt that you could get away with everything that paracetamol does, you could use aspirin for.
What does paracetamol do anyway?
Yeah.
What does acetaminophen do? Just some clarity there would be helpful.
What do you mean?
Well, it doesn't work for back pain.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work
for OA. Oh, I see. Now you guys are going to get all...
It's inferior for fever.
You're going to get all evidence-y on
me. Ibuprofen on our list, so I don't think we compared it to ASA for fever.
Yeah.
In fairness.
Yeah, we haven't compared it to ASA. You're right. But it's not... It certainly has a big place in use, but it's not... I think it's... if I thought about bringing paracetamol on, I think I put ibuprofen a couple miles ahead of it.
Correct.
Yeah. 100%. It is. Go ahead, Tina.
Sorry. Oh, I was just going to say the last few years. But the more you see looking at the data around it, it's just the less respect I have for that drug.
Yeah.
And like I said, you have patients come in and say it wasn't working, but I just told them they weren't dosing it properly. And now I understand that it probably isn't working for them.
Yeah.
Now, that argument, it's a great placebo pill and maybe has some mild benefit, but really compared to, say, NSAIDs, it's just amazing how prevalent it is.
I think the evidence is fairly clear for things like for postoperative pain, it's got value. From migraines, there are clearly trials for which it works above and beyond placebo. But I think you guys are right. The advantages and, you know, for acute back pain or chronic back pain. But I think the reason it could make a list would be is I think you guys are right saying it's not nearly as effective. Well, I shouldn't say that. In some circumstances, it is as effective as NSAIDs. For a number, it's not. I mean, for acute sports injuries, it's probably just as good and so on.
Not in kids.
No, not in kids. I agree.
No, remember, for sure it's not as good.
Yeah. But the big advantage of it is that NSAIDs chronically are a problem. And, you know, they're a problem from a blood pressure. They're a problem from an ulcer perspective. They're a problem from a heart failure perspective. They're a problem from a renal perspective. And so, you know, that's why paracetamol would be used, or acetaminophen, was because chronically it's much better tolerated.
But you wouldn't need to bring it on the list, and you could just make it by taking some sugar and putting it in a capsule.
Yes. You guys are now on your I don't like Tylenol kick. No, I'm just kidding. The evidence, you're right. The evidence is less impressive for sure than I think we used to think it was.
Yeah. I agree with you that there is evidence for its effectiveness. It does reduce fever. It does help. It's been shown to cause some assist or help with migraines, as you said.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. But a lot of things that we thought we were using it for, like OA, its change on a 100-point pain scale is 2 to 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not impressive.
I also think we're using it for self-limited injuries, which they're going to get better. And you're right. If it's first do no harm, well, it's really relatively safe unless you take a whack in it. Yeah. And that's what we've been doing for years. And I think as we're looking at chronic conditions that actually do need a bit of help, we're finding it is inferior to everything else. Yeah.
So that's why it didn't make the list, and we wanted to mention it, because I think it probably would make a whole bunch of people's list if you asked them. Mm-hmm. The next one.
Moving on to NSAIDs, James. Do you want to move on to... Maybe if we did have an NSAID on the list, ibuprofen didn't make the list, and do you wish to talk about ibuprofen?
Yeah, why don't we do that? That's a good idea. We'll change the order a little bit.
Somebody had not, or probably, I think the choice would be ibuprofen or naproxen.
Yeah, that would be the biggest.
I think that's the biggest.
Yeah.
The biggest.
So we didn't, neither ibuprofen or naproxen made the list because we felt, rightly or wrongly, that ASA should be able to give us equal pain relief. Again, there's not a whole lot of head-to-head comparisons. But it'd be very useful. But again, if you could have many NSAIDs on it, ibuprofen would be not an unreasonable thing to have on there. But we felt that because ASA also gives you some advantages of the, you know, cardiovascular risk reduction and so on, and we're limited to 20 drugs, these drugs just didn't make that list.
Yeah, correct. I would pick naproxen for adults and ibuprofen for kids.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think one of the teaching points would be, although diclofenac or Voltaren actually has a topical, and these ones don't have the topical.
Yeah.
Diclofenac has the same cardiovascular risk as COX-2s, mm-hmm. and therefore these both ibuprofen low dose and naproxen regular dose seem to be neutral on cardiovascular. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we forget.
Yeah. And you can give these topically. There are trials of giving these drugs topically, and they don't seem to be ineffective. We just
have a commercially available product,
right? You'd have to mix them and blah blah blah. And they're just so they're used in clinical trials, but they haven't really been actualized. And most of the evidence is with diclofenac,
correct?
But you could certainly, I mean, if we had it, and in James' perfect world, if he allowed us to compound drugs, he probably wouldn't.
No.
But if he did, we could try to compound these things.
And then, you know, the ibuprofen versus acetaminophen for fever?
Ibuprofen's better for fever in children, right?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Number needed to treat 15 or something. Or, no, 8 for a percent benefit of 15, yeah.
And then, remember, I think we also looked at fractures, counterintuitive to what we think.
Ibuprofen
was superior to including codeines, morphines,
and even morphine,
Canadian studies. So, when you actually have a fracture in the emerge and you actually say, give them ibuprofen, the nurse looks at you funny.
Well, effectiveness, so I think it was equivalent in effectiveness to morphine, but had less side effects, right?
Correct.
So not the nausea and vomiting that morphine has. So overall, probably a better product.
Exactly. And I know somebody will probably ask about fracture healing and NSAIDs. What do you think about that evidence?
Yeah, so that's, Yeah, I mean, there's one of the RCTs actually followed kids who received the NSAIDs long-term and saw no difference in healing of fractures. And the original evidence on that, which we talk about, is super high doses and tiny little bunnies. And
awful stories, right? They give them massive doses, break their legs on purpose and see if they heal. But
Surprise,
surprise, when they're receiving... It would be us taking about 6 pounds of ibuprofen and then wonder why metabolically we're not normal.
We're not doing well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or cohort studies showing that those that are on morphine and NSAIDs have worse fracture outcomes. It's like, well, there's a reason why they're on that kind of medication.
Absolutely.
Terrible fracture to begin with. Exactly. It's not a benign little buckle. It's a, man, this bone's sticking out of your skin and you need these meds for pain relief.
Yeah. And so it's a selection bias problem.
Totally
there.
Selection bias.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating story behind that. But... yeah, so probably naprosyn for adults because they're a little bit safer cardiovascular profile. Mm-hmm. No difference, no better renal, no better GI. But And then ibuprofen for kids, and mainly because that's where the evidence is.
Correct.
ASA mm-hmm. or naprosyn maybe is good, but the evidence is around ibuprofen.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. So that actually covers a couple of the drugs anyway. So then the next one was a lot of people had inhaled beclomethasone, and for sure we felt that you needed an inhaled corticosteroid, but because on our list we have dexamethasone, which is not commonly known to have there are an inhaled versions of it available, not necessarily in every country. That's why it's not on there. We thought an inhaled steroid did make our list, but just not inhaled beclomethasone. Another one that, you know, was on and off our list was nitroglycerin. And one could debate that maybe it should be on the list somewhere in the top 20, because, you know, it is very effective for a number of conditions. I mean, the least of it being, you know, heart failure,
angina,
acute and chronic, and so on. But
anal fissures, that's
anal,
right.
Anal fissures, yeah. And tennis elbow.
So this is a hard one, right? This is a hard one that could have easily made the list. It's also good too, James, if you're trying to, you know, get ready for a weightlifting show or one of these bodybuilding shows. If you lather that stuff on, it makes veins and stuff pop out. So think about that in your future when you're doing your pose downs.
Yeah, because, I mean, for you, it works beautifully.
Yeah.
Like
I'm wearing it now. I've got a sweater on, so.
You can see him through the sweater. It's amazing. Yeah.
And if there is one, nitroglycerin is kind of like the furosemide. You know, you see when you give it, it works almost immediately.
Yeah. It's hard. This is a good one, and you could easily argue this is, and the next one's like this too. Which ones would you actually pick?
This is a
symptomatic one. It actually, you know, helps people out quite a bit. It's hard to say. It could easily have made the list.
But if you put it on your list, then you're not like us, and we don't like you.
Yeah.
so nitroglycerin for sure. Now the next one, and this is, we again, a lot of people had it on their list, is the warfarins or the slash new oral anticoagulants, the rivaroxaban, the bigotrans, and all those sort of stuff. Now they didn't make our list, but they, you know, these are definitely useful medications, and the absolute benefit in people who have AFib and so on really blows a lot of other preventive medications out of the water.
Right, and so if those listening are wanting to write letters, mm-hmm. you should be writing your letter starting with the question, you chose PEG, but not warfarin.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so that would be how I would start any letter you're going to write to us, because it, and that, there is, our answer back is, uh-huh.
Yes.
There is no good answer for why, other than what we've talked about. And now looking at it, I probably waffle back and go back to warfarin. I don't know.
If I had to choose one, I would not choose warfarin. I'd choose one of the new oral anticoagulants.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's reasonable. Dabigatran or rivaroxaban, apixaban, anyone. They're all the same, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for DVTs, for PEs, these things have a lot, and obviously AFib. Nothing. And you think about what drugs we have, most of the things that we have reduce cardiovascular events 30%. Mike pointed that out with ASA. Mm-hmm. This is a 66% reduction at least in cardiovascular events. So,
and some of the listeners may say just use aspirin. There's really aspirin at the best of it, maybe at the high end, would be a 20% relative reduction.
Yeah.
And I think some of those are just overlaps between some cardiovascular and some other stuff going on. So I don't think this is one where you could use aspirin for somebody who has a reasonable CHAD score. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably say over yeah. one. And yeah. two for sure. And yeah. then I guess the debate is on one that I think mm-hmm. An oral anticoagulant makes a ton of sense. And I guess we look at...
So we could totally see this being on the list. But, you know, we had to take some off. Not everybody can make our team.
But really, like, this is... I think of all of them, this is the one, right?
Yeah, that, I would go even nitroglycerin.
Yeah.
But, for symptom control.
Anyway, let's move on.
The next one that didn't make our list was metformin. And people who...
Oh, no, you missed one.
What?
Amitriptyline.
Oh, I changed the order of them.
Ah.
So that's okay. We'll get to the antidepressants. So we'll do metformin.
Okay.
Sure.
So metformin, you'll notice that on our top 20 drug list or medication list, the only drug for diabetes was insulin that we included in there. And it's probably because the rest of them don't do anything. Yeah. Other than lower glucose. Now people are going, really, metformin? I thought it was the drug of choice. And if you have to use an oral agent for type 2 diabetes, the best evidence is metformin, but it's weak at best from that perspective. Now, if it works as well as people say it does, then it's fairly impressive, but the evidence is very, very weak. And, that's why maybe 5 years ago, I would have probably maybe put it on the list. I'm far less impressed with the evidence now. And, but that's my rationale for not having it on there.
And I think when you say weak, one of the key things you're meaning there is highly inconsistent.
Yes.
Because we have one trial with this is really poorly done that showed a benefit versus a sulfonylurea, mm-hmm. which had some cookbook stuff going on. And we have the UK PDS, which for all its disadvantages is a relatively good trial. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch that don't show or that show metformin does nothing.
Yeah. So it's tricky. And so if you could only have 20 drugs... I'm not likely going to be throwing on a drug for which I'm going, I don't know if it does anything.
Yeah.
You know, now, it does have other indications, but not enough of them that it made me put it on a top 10 or top 20 list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's some talk, it might work a bit for fertility and certain stuff, but it's not, is that enough to bring it on a, it's probably not.
Now,
I think if you look at prescribing in Canada, I suspect that would be one of the highest.
Yeah.
As far as what's prescribed, that actually didn't make the top 20.
Yeah, you're right.
No,
you're right,
sure. Mike. Yeah, no, for sure. There was a discussion, why is penicillin not on that list? Well, I think we've covered that with the amoxicillin CLAV. Penicillin really doesn't add anything. Is it nice to have penicillin available? Absolutely, because it's still very useful for things like strep throat and so on. But remember, if you only have 20 medications, you can't have every antibiotic available. So that's why we didn't put penicillin on there. And now let's get back to those drugs. So the other antidepressants, let's just talk about those a little bit. Some of the ones that came onto the list were amitriptyline, fluoxetine, and bupropion. And maybe just very quickly, we could talk about why those didn't make the list. I think there's two reasons. One, we had a limited number of drugs, but quetiapine covers a number of other medical conditions. And amitriptyline is useful. It's got some other indications, chronic neuropathic pain and so on and so forth. But we really couldn't justify putting another one of these drugs on the list. But I don't know if you guys have any comments about the amitriptyline, fluoxetine, and bupropion.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think our group advocates heavily for the TCAs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're always kind of pushing them, and even for nortriptyline for smoking cessation, et cetera. So it's and the evidence is, if anything, amitriptyline is at least as good or superior to other antidepressants. There's a Cochrane review on that. And so why didn't it make the list? Well, it really was a problem of just too many drugs. But if we were allowed one other drug, it would probably be either nortriptyline or amitriptyline for me. But
No, for sure.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I think it's great for many uses, depression, smoking cessation, chronic pain, sleeping, what have you. But we had to just limit its space. But overall, I think it's a reasonable drug.
Yeah, for sure. So so that's why bupropion, amitriptyline, and fluoxetine were not put on our list. But again, very useful medications for a variety of conditions. Olanzapine was one of the other drugs, but I think we can cover that off again, and that we felt that we did need an antipsychotic, but we've got that covered with quetiapine, so that's why olanzapine didn't make it on the list. I don't think anything else we need to say about that?
No.
No, I don't think so. I initially put on the list metoclopramide.
Yeah, it's interesting. Why did you put that on?
Well, because it's got a variety of different uses, right? You know, for migraines, for heartburn, and so on. But now that I'm sort of trying to justify any reason, I can't come up with great reasons for why I had it on there. But it was certainly one of the drugs, you know, that does play a role as, you know, anti-nauseant. I think I probably already mentioned that and so on. But no, I don't, there's nothing that really makes it stand apart from anything else.
Yeah. Actually, I had it on my list as well, and I thought it was for nausea, vomiting, and I think there's ways you can be like unwell and not feel well. And I think one of these, I think vomiting and feeling terrible is awful. And I think for a symptom point of view, I think that choosing a anti-nauseant, anti-emetic would be helpful. And I think the added benefit includes migraine treatment. So I actually had it on my top 20.
But I'm quite happy not to have it in there because it doesn't, there's so many other ones that we needed in there. And one drug that I didn't mention was haloperidol. So again, a potentially useful medication, but it didn't make the list because we already had one agent that did that. So that's why that was not on there. Then there's a couple of drugs that were listed that people thought should be on there. One of them was atenolol. We kind of went over why that's not on the list in a previous podcast.
Yeah.
It's probably the least useful of all the beta blockers, and it really doesn't work.
It's just popular, and it has a legacy effect, right? So for when I started to work, it was popular. So,
exactly.
I can see why people would say that.
Yeah. And then, I think we ran over this when we talked about the top 20. There is no ACE inhibitor on there. Something like lisinopril or ramipril or enalapril or any of those pril drugs. Again, very, very useful medications, but we tried to justify the fact that we chose an ARB because of the things like, remember, there was cost was not an issue, and you know, we were worried about the cough associated with it and so on. So that's why none of the ACE inhibitors made it. But again, a very useful class of medications.
And then one that didn't make it, James, that everyone probably thought we would recommend.
Well, and the statins or a statin. And they were sort of on the list, off list, on the list, and off the list. And my main reason for not putting them on was they have no impact on any symptoms.
Yeah, that's just it. They can't. It's that's where they fall apart.
Yeah.
I would just their biggest thing is to prevent cardiovascular disease, and in this new society, you have to go somehow. So.
And that might be the better
that
one.
That might be the best way. So.
And so, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that they have an effect in reducing cardiovascular events. You know, it's, and if you're if your cardiovascular 10-year risk is in the 30 or 40 or 50%, the absolute numbers are not too bad. But if your risk is, you know, 5%, it's terrible. But for that reason, we had other drugs that are used for cardiovascular risk reduction that also have an effect on symptoms. So that's why the statins, none of the statins made it on the list. They were sort of on and off the list, but they're kind of in our farm team list of medications, but they just didn't make the show, if you will.
Yeah, they didn't make the cut. Well, it's interesting because, like, if we look at drugs, we often look, we also try to base things when we're talking about ibuprofen, for example, where the evidence lies. There's very few drugs out there that are as well researched as the statins.
Right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that. It just boiled down to the fact that in this, you want to make people feel better first. Focus on that rather than making people live longer and miserable.
And then the final drug, and I'm going to let Mike Colbert talk about this because he kept bringing it up and he cried when we didn't put it on the list, was tranexamic acid. And Mike, why don't you say
so
why?
Stop bleeding.
Yeah.
And so in traumas, and you talked about this was not obstetrical and all that kind of stuff. In traumas, I haven't really, really looked that close at the evidence, but it looks like the number needed to treat in a randomized control trial is about 100 for death. And so, again, when you think of that kind of outcome, and trauma's probably, if you looked at your new society, depending if they have motor vehicles or not, I'm not sure if it's just bikes only, James, but if they actually had motor vehicles.
I'm carried around in a lovely cart.
Or maybe Segway.
Segway. I was trying to remember the name of it. Yeah,
remember, the guy who invented Segway died from a trauma off a Segway. I think that's true.
Really?
Yes. Oh. And so I think that if we are going to die of, if young people are going to die of stuff, and I think we put young people's deaths
on their Segway.
Young people dying is probably worse than old people dying fairness to all the older people. But I think
we're those older people.
Yes,
though,
you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
There is some evidence, randomized controlled trial evidence, that this probably makes a difference.
Yeah.
So that already, again, probably the next best.
Yeah, exactly. It might make our top 40 list.
Sure.
Yeah, the farm team.
So, so those are the drugs that did not make our list. Clearly, you could tell we're not convinced that some of them should not have been on our list, but it was tricky. And but nonetheless, those are the medications that we came up with and talked about. And we hope you found this discussion useful. I just find it fascinating that the top 20 we came up, their average year of patenting was in the mid-50s. And I think it tells you something about the fact that not just because it's new doesn't necessarily make it better. And so we would love feedback from you guys. If you've got some that you think should be on the list that we've missed, let us know. Just as a reminder, we've got our Best Science Medicine course coming up May 6 and 7 of 2016 in lovely Vancouver. You can find all the information about that on our website. Sign up early. We typically sell out. So please get on that if you want to come and hang out with us for a couple of days. It'll be a lot of fun, I hope. Tools for practice, you guys are still doing lots of those. Check out our website. We're always putting up new videos and tips and suggestions and tools like the CVD calculator and so on. So please check out all those things, and they're available at that website that I just mentioned. And so other than that, I think I'll leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
So long for now.
Yeah, see you.